Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today we have a really exciting topic. We're talking about the sunken Viking fleet of Roskilde.
Exactly, and this is truly one of the most significant maritime finds of the Viking Age. It's about several ships that were discovered in the Roskilde Fjord in Denmark.
Roskilde itself was one of the most important centers of power in Denmark during the 11th century. That's where the kings resided, where trade converged. The fjord was essentially the city's lifeline.
The fascinating thing is, these ships weren't sunk by a storm or in a battle. They were deliberately sunk there. As a kind of underwater barrier.
They weighted old ships with stones and placed them across the shipping channel?
Specifically in the so-called Peorrenne, the Pepper Channel, about 20 kilometers north of Roskilde. This forced enemy ships into a narrow, winding secondary channel. Without local knowledge, nobody could get through, and certainly not by surprise.
That was really cleverly thought out. The defenders could reach the barrier relatively quickly, while attackers took much longer and lost the element of surprise.
But now to the discovery itself. That happened in the 1960s when divers found remains in the fjord. The local fishermen had known about the stone wall for some time, but nobody suspected
what was really behind it.
The archaeologists initially thought they had found ships from the late Middle Ages, so maybe the 14th or 15th century.
An understandable assumption. Roskilde remained important even after the Viking Age.
But then further investigations came along that would turn everything upside down.
Yes, the results were a sensation.
The radiocarbon dating showed these ships date from the first half of the 11th century. That means we are talking about genuine Viking ships, almost 1,000 years old.
That's quite remarkable. When you compare it with other famous finds, the Oseberg ship was discovered in 1904, the Gokstad ship as early as 1879, both in Norway, both in burial mounds.
And both were smaller. The Gokstad ship was about 24 meters long, the Oseberg ship 22 meters. In Roskilde, they later found ships up to 30 meters in length.
That makes Roskilde one of the most important discovery sites of all. Here we don't have individual ceremonial ships from graves, but real working vessels. Warships, merchant ships, different types.
5 ships were recovered during the first excavations. And they tell us more about shipbuilding and the maritime life of the Vikings than almost any other find.
Just imagine. These ships were sunk around 1070, during the reign of Sven Estrisan. And nearly 900 years later, divers suddenly appear and discover them again.
And that was just the beginning. More finds came later. But more on that in a moment.
I'm curious how the archaeologists even managed to recover these delicate wooden fragments. That must have been an enormous challenge. Absolutely. That was the central challenge, because you couldn't just show up with a crane and pull the wreck pieces out of the mud.
The archaeologists faced a real problem. Working underwater is one thing, but the ships were lying in mud. The wooden fragments were extremely fragile. Divers alone wouldn't get them very far.
That's why they chose a rather ingenious solution, a cofferdam. It's basically a huge box without a bottom that you place in the water and then pump out. Like an upside-down bathtub.
Just imagine. They built this massive cofferdam around the entire excavation site, pumped out the water, and suddenly they could work in dry conditions.
From wooden walkways that spanned the drained area. This way they could access every fragment without stepping on the delicate structures.
And the wood itself? That's the...
You have to understand. The waterlogged wood contains 3 to 4 times as much water as its own dry weight, meaning the cell structure is essentially only supported by the water.
That means, without that supporting water, it simply falls apart.
And if you just let it dry, everything shrinks and cracks. The wood would have crumbled to dust.
So they had to find a way to replace the water gently.
The method was still relatively new at the time. Every recovered piece of wood was immediately sealed in plastic bags to keep it moist. Then everything went to the conservation department of the Danish National Museum.
There they treated the wood with polyethylene glycol, a waxy substance that slowly penetrates the cells and displaces the water. For the Roskilde ships, this took years.
The care paid off, though. Without this method, we wouldn't have any original fragments left to study today.
We already mentioned the result earlier, Viking Age. To determine this, samples were taken for radiocarbon dating, a fascinating method in itself.
The C14 method. Essentially, it exploits the fact that living organisms constantly absorb radioactive carbon. When a tree is felled, that stops.
And then the C14 decays at a known rate. After about 5,730 years, half is gone, the so-called half-life. So if you measure how much is left...
You can calculate back to when the tree was felled.
And the result was... First half of the 11th century. Definitely the Viking Age, not the late Middle Ages.
That was the proof. These ships dated from almost 1,000 years ago.
For the archaeologists, that must have been an incredible moment. They hadn't just found old shipwrecks, but had opened a window into the maritime world of the Vikings.
And the conservation technique made it possible for us to still study these finds today. The original wood still exists. That's far from guaranteed with finds this old.
What I'm interested in, what types of ships did DB-Able to one on a world word? What can be DB-8? Yes, for we is filterably when the did was able to be known. What I'm interested in. What I'm interested in, with 5 ships, there must have been different kinds. The 5 recovered ships, now known as the Skuldelöf ships, really excited the researchers. They didn't find 5 identical ships, but a complete range of different types.
What exactly was found?
Warships, merchant ships for the open sea and the coast, and a small transport vessel. Basically, the entire spectrum of Viking Age seafaring in one go.
That's what makes this find so valuable for research. Normally, you have individual burial finds. Here, you could compare different construction methods directly.
And the largest of these ships was truly spectacular. The number... Wait, it was a bit confusing at first. They numbered it Skuldelöf 2... But later it turned out that parts of it had initially been catalogued as Ship 4. That's why it's often called Skuldelöf 2 plus 4 today.
And how big was...
About 30 meters long. At the time, the longest Viking ship ever found. The record wasn't broken until decades later.
30 meters? That's longer than many modern sailboats.
A genuine warship, a so-called skite. Slender, streamlined, built for speed. That thing could transport a crew of over 60 warriors.
The difference from the cargo ships is enormous. The knarr, that's what the Viking Age merchant ships were called, were built much broader. Skuldelöf 1, for example, was only about 16 meters long, but at nearly 5 meters wide, it was a proper cargo hauler.
The knarrs relied mainly on sails, with only a few oars for maneuvering in harbours. Longships, on the other hand, often had 30 pairs of oars or more. They were fast under sail, but needed all those oars for maneuvering, coastal sailing and combat.
What fascinates me is the discovery of a complete stem. On Skuldelev 6, a small coastal vessel for local transport.
The stem is the...
The upright timber at the bow or stern, where all the planks come together. Finding such a complete piece is extremely rare.
Normally, they are the first to break, because they bear the greatest stress. This find shows us how the Vikings attached their planks to the stem, a technique we could otherwise only reconstruct.
The museum that houses these ships today opened in 1969, the Viking Ship Museum in Roskilde.
And the work there never stops. The researchers build reconstructions, test the sailing properties, learn through hands-on experience.
It's called experimental archaeology. You build accurate replicas using historical methods and try out how the ships actually behave.
The reconstruction of Skuldelev 2 is called Hauhingsten fra Glendalough, the sea stallion from Glendalough. They actually made voyages to Dublin with it, across the North Sea.
And then, in 1997, came the big surprise. The museum wanted to create an artificial island for workshops and moorings.
And what did they find while excavating?
9 more Viking ships. Just like that.
The fjord in front of Roskilde was apparently a veritable ship graveyard. The 1997 finds were in some cases even better preserved than the original Skuldelev ships.
The longest of these new ships was over 36 meters long. It broke the record set by Skuldelev 2.
Which shows that we probably only know a fraction of what lies in the fjord. Every construction project can bring new discoveries.
The museum today works with a large team of permanent staff and volunteers. Many come from the vibrant Viking scene in Denmark and bring practical experience with traditional crafts.
The volunteers participate in shipbuilding, in sailing the reconstructions, in educational outreach. The museum isn't a dusty collection, but a place where history comes alive.
What strikes me is that with reconstructions like these, you often learn things you could never derive from the finds alone.
For example, the sailing characteristics. A longship like Skuldelev 5 achieved about 6 knots cruising speed, with peaks up to 12 knots. Before that, this was only known theoretically.
And how much coordination it takes to steer such a ship. 30 rowers have to work in sync. What makes Viking shipbuilding so special is the choice of tools. They used almost exclusively axes, no saws.
And there was a very practical reason for that.
When you split a log with an axe, you follow the natural grain of the wood. The fibres remain intact. The wood is more flexible and tear-resistant afterwards.
A saw, on the other hand, cuts across the fibres. The wood becomes more brittle, more prone to cracking. Especially at sea, where the planks have to constantly flex, that would be fatal.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
You can still see this today on the preserved fragments. Saw marks are extremely rare. Most of the wood was split and hewn. That's essentially a hallmark of genuine Viking ships.
That's why the museum in Roskilde has also reconstructed the original tools. Viking axes, recreated based on archaeological finds.
And they weren't just ordinary axes. There were, how should I put it, specialized tools. Broad axes for smoothing surfaces that worked almost like a plane.
Then there was also the...
Atze, the T-shaped axes used to hollow out recesses.
A specific tool for every task. Clinker construction demanded the highest precision.
In clinker construction, the planks overlap like roof tiles. The exact overlap varied depending on the ship and position on the hull, always optimized for water tightness and load-bearing capacity. Each individual plank was custom-fitted and then secured with iron rivets.
The genius of this is the flexibility. The hull can flex slightly in waves without becoming leaky. The forces are distributed across all the seam edges.
And for sealing, they presumably used tar from pine wood?
Exactly. And this protective coating had to be renewed regularly.
The ships needed constant maintenance. This wasn't a one-time thing.
What fascinates me particularly is the selection of wood. The Vikings preferred to fell trees in winter, when the sap flow was lower.
And different types of wood depending on the purpose. Oak for the keel, the ribs, and the planks, because it's hard and resistant. Pine or spruce for the masts. They grew straight and were lighter.
But the fascinating thing is how the craftsmen assessed quality. Not with measuring instruments, but
with their senses.
They would tap the wood and tell from the sound whether it was healthy. And from the smell, whether it had dried properly. That's really impressive.
Experiential knowledge, passed down through generations. No textbooks, no formulas. Pure practice.
An experienced shipbuilder could look at a tree and already see which planks he would get from it. Before the first axe blow fell.
That reminds me of what you learn from reconstructions. When the researchers in Roskilde build using traditional methods today, they often only then realize why certain techniques were so important.
Theory is one thing, but when you split a plank yourself and feel how the wood responds, that's a different kind of understanding.
The Vikings left no blueprints. Everything was kept in their heads and passed on orally. Master and apprentice, generation after generation.
Which shows how highly developed this culture was. Not technologically in the modern sense, but in their understanding of materials and craftsmanship.
And these ships weren't crude barges. Building a 30-meter long ship with overlapping planks that all fit perfectly. That's engineering mastery.
Practically no rivet wasted. Everyone was in the right place.
The Skuldeleo ships demonstrate this clearly. Even after 1,000 years in the water, you can still recognize the precision of the workmanship.
What's easy to forget with all this technology? People lived on these ships. And under conditions we can hardly imagine today.
Less than a meter of personal space per crew member. Just think about that. 1 meter wide, maybe 1.5 meters long, that was your space.
On a longship like Skuldeleo II, there were over 60 men, shoulder to shoulder, day and night, in all weathers. There was no privacy.
And such voyages often lasted weeks. From Scandinavia to England took 3 to 5 days under good conditions. But sailing to Iceland or Greenland meant
weeks-long voyages on the open sea.
That means you had to get along with each other. Not just function, but really live together.
The researchers who sailed on the reconstructed ships today report exactly this. It's not the physical exertion that's the hardest part, but the social interaction.
You share everything. Food, sleeping spots, watch shifts. If someone doesn't pull their weight or constantly starts arguments, it endangers the whole crew.
Social skills weren't a nice bonus on a Viking ship. They were essential for survival. Anyone incapable of fitting in while also doing their part didn't last long.
The Vikings probably had a good sense for this. When selecting a crew, it wasn't just strength or experience that mattered, but also character.
What's interesting is what the Roskilde finds tell us about this culture. The ships are technical masterpieces, but they were also social spaces.
Exactly. The ship was transport, sleeping quarters, kitchen and community all in one.
And the museum makes that tangible today. Anyone who sails there understands more about the Vikings after a few hours than from any book.
Experimental archaeology is really valuable in that way. Through practical reenactment, you gain a completely different understanding of the achievements of these seafarers.
When you put it all together, the discovery, the recovery, the reconstructions, then Roskilde has
fundamentally changed our view of the Vikings.
The Vikings weren't just warriors and raiders. They were engineers, merchants, explorers. Their maritime culture was highly developed, and their social structures on board were impressively well thought out.
The Skuldelilt ships and the later finds from 1997 opened, as we mentioned at the beginning, a window into this world. A window that would have remained forever closed without the careful work of the archaeologists.
And the beautiful thing is, this research continues. The museum in Roskilde remains an active research site where history is explored hands-on.
Anyone who has the chance to visit should take it, or to see one of the replicas when they set sail.
And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. Carmen, thanks for the exciting journey through the world of Viking ships.
My pleasure. It's a fascinating topic that shows how much we can still learn from the past.
If you want to learn more about Vikings, battlemerchant.com has plenty of material. From the blog with more articles to the range of products for anyone who wants to experience history firsthand.
We look forward to having you tune in again. Until next time.
Bye.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.